is Vajrahasyam class number 6, Kartik 2009. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's again giving another verse from Vainugita to describe the gopis Adiruddha Mahabhav, their Madanaki Mahabhav. And this is the, we've been hearing already, but again, this verse is coming out of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's heart. He's feeling separation from the Lord because he's engaged in Vipralamba Sadhana. In Vipralamba Sadhana, one feels something. Yugayutanamesha, you know, one moment is like 12 years or more, because a yuga can be 12 years, it can be 12 millenniums, it can be 12 months, 12 is there. And we may feel like that. Even devotees, sometimes they feel like that. They have darshan of the deities in the temple, and then they're away all day and serving, and then they can't wait till the evening time to see them. They feel, oh, it's been so long, I haven't seen them all day, I have to rush to the temple and see them. So even devotees feel the pain of separation, especially Sankirtan devotees, because it's so difficult to go out and leave the temple, leave the spiritual atmosphere in the morning, go out all day in the field distributing books, and it's like going to hell, and it's like having a tour of the 7 lower planetary systems. Then you come back to the temple, it's like you're transcending the whole material world, and it feels so much relief and so much joy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has all the Akinchan sadhus or siddha mahatmas in the line of pure devotion. They are teaching by their example that they are sometimes in the mood of Vipralamba, and sometimes they're having sportis where they're actually engaged directly in the pastimes of the Lord. And then they're engaging directly in the pastimes of the Lord, serving the Lord in their siddhadeya as a mandri or sakha, usually mandri. And they're right there, and everything's very real and practically feels as if they can touch the Lord and touch his pastimes. And this is called sporti visporti, at the level of bhava. And this is their meditation, and their smaran goes to that level. But then that meditation breaks, and they return to their sadhaka roop, and they leave their siddhadeya resting, you could say, within their deeper consciousness, antardasha, and they come to bahirdasha, and then they feel great pangs of separation. Oh, I was just with Radharani, and the gopis and mantris were there, and Rupa Mantri asked me to go pick flowers, and I was pulling on the ceiling fan and fanning their lordships, the divine couple. Then Rupa Goswami asked me to go pick some flowers for a garland. So I left that service. And I was seeing how beautiful the divine couple were lying on a flower bed, and I left that to pick flowers to bring back the service of Rupa Mantri and my Guru Mantri. And then they wake up, oh, I can't see them. I can't see, I've lost that sporti. I can't see Radha and Krishna. Where are they? Oh, I'm so unqualified. Then they feel this great separation. They write about it in their prayers. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's teaching in this section of Bhajan Rahasyam, Yugayutanamesha. Now this verse is all about separation and feeling pain and separation. Chakshushau pravashayatam, tears are flowing from my eyes, I'm so much separated from Govinda. When will I see him? Of course, we haven't seen him once. So he's in this separation, and he's saying, oh, Radharani, I want to teach. I'm leaving this world. I've written so many things and started so many preaching missions, and I want to teach the devotees how to develop separation. Please show me the way. Give me the verses. Give me the intelligence. As Prabhupada, when he got to New York, he was praying in that marking Bhagavad Dharma. He said, oh my Lord, somehow I've been given the name Bhaktivedanta, and I've come to this foreign shore where everyone's covered with passion and ignorance. And now you want, please fulfill the true purport of my name, that I will be able to give everyone the true knowledge of Veda, the essence and conclusion of the Vedas, and I can fill everyone with devotion and bhakti, as a real Bhaktivedanta should. So please use me as your instrument to spread pure love in this country of degradation and decadence. So Radharani, she's saying, yes, Bhaktivinoda, I will teach you, I will give you verses, I'll give you shlokas, keys to separation, keys to the kingdom of separation. I will tell you, I will teach you, I'll reveal to you how to teach the people how to develop Viparlumbha Bhajan, how to awaken deep feelings of separation for me and my sham, and how to cultivate their devotion and separation, because love begins with separation. Everywhere begins with separation. Love doesn't begin with union. Can anyone defeat this point? Love begins with separation. Yes? When you first meet a girl, you're like lying in oneness with her? No, there's that moment of first meeting. That means there was separation. There was some time and space when you didn't know each other and didn't meet. It's not that, and we're not birds. Because birds, they're married when they're born. Very interesting. Because there's a few little eggs laid in the nest, and the mother sits on the eggs. Everybody agrees? They know this is the system. And then, at a certain point, then the eggs hatch. Hatch means they bust open. They break open. And then, out of one egg, one little bird sticks its head up, like this. Then, right next door, about an inch away, another bird pops out. One bird is male, and one bird is female. And the female looks at the male and says, "Oh, you look good." And he says, "You want to get married?" And he says, "Yeah." So, okay, well, let's you know, we can't fly yet, but as soon as we get our wings, let's fly out of here. So they hang out eating worms for a few days, and as soon as they get, you know, they become teenagers, you know, get their driver's license and stuff. As soon as they get their driver's license and they can, you know, drive, then they go get married. No, so they're in the nest, and as soon as they get their wings, then what do? They fly off together. So from the day a bird is born, he's married to, he meets his wife and marries her. Those two birds fly off. There's no divorce. There's no separation. They fly together until they die. So this is like husbands and wives that are really attached and really can't separate, and all day at work. "Hello, how are you?" "I'm fine. You just called me 5 minutes ago." "I know, but are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm okay." "Hello. What are you doing?" I'm cooking the rice." "Okay, bye." Oh, 5 minutes later, "Hello. Oh, how are you?" "Oh, is everything fine?" "Yeah, I'm fine. How are you?" "Oh, I'm rolling in chapatis." "Oh, that's nice. Okay, bye." "Hello, how are you?" So attached, every 5 minutes calling husband and wife. Then you become bird. And you can just fly everywhere together, and like this. So but generally, love begins with separation everywhere. There's one person somewhere, another person somewhere, and there's some kind of introduction, or some kind of meeting, some kind of attraction, some kind of development, some kind of growth. And this is the same thing. It's the same thing with the conditioned soul falling in love with God. It's the same thing for the liberated soul falling in love with God. It's the same thing for the gopis falling in love with God in Boma Vrindavan. So therefore, the beginning of prema is viparlumbha, separation. So before we can have a full, eternal, unlimited, loving relationship with Krishna, there must be a strong foundation of viparlumbha bhajan, or separation. And separation in the spiritual world, even that's a feature, because everything is eternally fresh, new. Radharani is always meeting Krishna. And there's four types of separation, which we'll discuss. Maybe today even. So this first thing, this yugayatanameshina, that's at the level, this is at the level of prema. This nayanam galadashindariyo varanam galadashindariyo, this verse describes bhava, the sentence of bhava. This verse, and this is the level of bhava. So now it's jata rati saraka, that the bhava has come, rati has come. And now at this level, there's two kinds of prema. First, there's yugayatanameshina viparlumbha, and then there's ashlishiva parvatam banashnavam. Then there's a firm embrace, then there's this is sambhog prema, where there's actual meeting. And maybe feeling separation even in meeting. That's another type of separation. You're with the beloved, would feel separation. But at this level, at yogayatanameshena, there's separation, but there's no meeting. And he's gone to a distant place, or you haven't even met him yet. This is purva, purva rag. prior attachment, hearing about the lover, seeing the lover, like Rukmini. Rukmini first developed Vipralamba, separation from Krishna, Dwarkadish. She heard about him because her father was a very pious and religious king, King Bhishmaka, and many great rishis and saints, even Narada Muni, was coming to visit him because he did so many elaborate yagyas and pujas which would attract the demigods to come down in those days. And they would, of course, talk about Krishna. What else? Who else? Because he was there at Dwarkadish. And Rukmini would simply listen and hear, oh, he's so attractive, so heroic, so beautiful, charming, sweet. And she fixed her mind on him, although there was an arranged marriage between her and, was it Shishupal. But she didn't want that. You can't say it's a love marriage, or you can say it was love at first hearing. This is the whole thing, the difference between Kali Yuga and previous Yugas. In previous Yugas, they emphasize Shravanam, Shruti, hearing. Because hearing is closely connected to consciousness. Hearing goes direct to consciousness, but the other senses go to the mind. So Kali Yuga is a body Yuga. So we say, what do we say? Love at first sight. Eyes, object, love, mind. But in the beginning, at the very end of Dwapara Yuga, Rukmini's love was based on hearing. Love at first hearing. She heard about Krishna and she fell in love with him. She never saw him. There were no movies, she didn't have any cable TV with Mahabharata on it, and she could see Krishna on the Mahabharata or some Krishna television show, or she couldn't see on the cable TV or in a local theater. She could only hear from the rishis. So hearing, now what do we say? Love at first sight, and seeing is believing, isn't it? We say, if I see it, I believe it. I saw it with my own eyes. Yashoda, I saw it. What show? Well, you saw it. It must be a fact. Absolute truth. So this is Kali Yuga. Everything is seeing. But before was Shruti, was hearing. Oh, I heard. How do you know this? Oh, I heard from Narada Muni. Oh, I heard from the Bhagavatam. There's some Bhagavat Pravachan, Bhagavat Pat. So hearing was emphasized. Shravanam. We don't see that Prahlad Maharaj, what is he writing? He's writing about the transcendental experience. The transcendental experience was based on Shravanam. He doesn't say seeing, smelling, the 9 limbs of devotion. Smelling them, tasting them, touching them. He says Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnum. He says that this, the devotional experience, the experience of God, is based on Shravanam Kirtanam, not smelling them. Smelling them, touching them. Smelling, you should smell Krishna, then touch Krishna. He says, and see Krishna. He says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, not Vishnu smelling them. Of course, later that will come at the level of bhava, then we'll smell Krishna's fragrance. And we'll feel his touch at the level of praying, as Vishwanatha Chakravarti is telling, the eighth shower of Madhurya Kadambini. How we'll swoon and we'll fall, and Krishna will feel the touch of Krishna. He'll hold our hand, or he'll embrace us, or he'll kiss our forehead, depending on our rasa, to awaken us from our swoon of ecstatic love or rapture upon experiencing Krishna. Very beautiful section of Madhurya Kadambini telling the effects of prema upon the premi bhakta. Eighth shower of Madhurya Kadambini. It's very inspiring to some light years in the future rise to such an exalted level of realization. So these verses came from Radharani. Bhaktivinoda wrote them down, and he's encouraging everyone to chant the holy name and hear these verses and pray to the gopis and pray to the Bhagavatam, these verses, that some of these wonderful feelings and sentiments will rise in the heart. This is the text 6 from Bhajan Rahasyam. This is a chime, wind chime. It's supposed to be the sound of Krishna's flute. a little of it is nice, but a lot of it is not nice. Like everything, except the holy name. A little holy name is nice. A lot of holy name is nice. But anything that's coming from the material world, a little, okay, but too much. Too much good sound is no good. Too much good food is no good. Right? Too much good material music becomes no good. Boring, hackneyed, stale. Too much good friends become no good. But too much prasada, oh, it's too good. Too much holy name, it's too good. Too much good devotees. If you meet a good devotee, you never want to leave him. You get stuck over there. I remember sometimes we'd be sitting at the feet of some very advanced devotees, and we knew that at a certain time that darshan would be over, but we would hope that the clocks would break and that his servant wouldn't come and remind everyone, because we were all relishing too much. And the servant would come out and say, Guru Maharaj, it's 10 o'clock now. Because at 10 o'clock he had to take some medicine and rest or whatever. And then we would see the servant coming up the stairs and think, oh, it's over now. It's going to get over. So we'll meet again tomorrow. So then we'd go crazy waiting till the next day to meet. So this is too much devotion can never be. Non-attractive. Bhagavatam 10.21.19 Ga gopakera nuvanam nayatorudhara Penu sune klapades tanabrish britsu sakya Aspandanam gatimatam pulakas tarunam Nir yoga pashakrita lakshanayor vichitram. As gopis are speaking again, now they're seeing Krishna in their heart's eye. We have the term mind's eye. We say, oh, in my mind's eye. In your mind's eye, you should try to see. And gopis have heart's eye. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena. Oh, Sakis, the elegance and charm of the two brothers, our Shama Sundar and Gora Sundar Balaram, are quite unique and wonderful. When Shama Sundar, together with his coward boys, leads the cows from one forest to another by sweetly playing a melody on his venu. He ties on the top of his turban with a niryoga rope, which is used for binding the legs of the calves. And from his shoulders hangs another rope called pasha, niryoga pasha, it says. Upon seeing the sweet, unparalleled beauty and hearing the sound of the venu, the moving living entities like animals and birds and even rivers, what to speak of humans, they become stone-like and unmoving. And ecstatic symptoms like horripilation, which is hair standing on end, are displayed in non-moving entities like trees. Oh, Sakhi, how can I describe the magical sound of that flute? Sakadeno sange Krishna udara svabhav murali ragane Sabe deya sakya bhav Jangame karila spanda hina tarugane Pulakita koila aho Vichitra lakshane hina krishna napaya Pranavete jai Kabe sakhi vidi krishna divena amai. It's a Bengali version of the same by Bhakti. The beautiful women of Braj are being filled with Mahabhav. They are reflecting thus. Vishwanath is again repeating the statements of the gopis here. All the moving and non-moving entities of Vrindavan are fully blessed. Their lives are successful. Why? Because they're touching Krishna's lotus feet, or somehow they've attained a relationship with him. Oh, Sakhi, we are the only ones in Braja who are unfortunate. This is what they're thinking. So the gopis now, Krishna has gone out with the cows. They're so deeply absorbed in him and completely immersed in ecstatic rapture that they feel they're seeing Krishna directly. Of course, it's not that we can't imitate this exalted level of devotion that the Braja gopis have, because that's an automatic spurti or darshan that they have due to the extent and depth of their pure love or their mahabhav. But as a devotional practice, the sadhaka can attempt to, it's called immersion, absorption and immersion, he can attempt to invoke the presence of the Lord within his consciousness by a conscious practice. That practice is that we see, for example, if we live in a temple, we take darshan of Radha Madhava or Radha Shamsundar, Radha Govinda, whomever. We pay very minute attention, conscious, eyes-open attention to the details of their sringar, their dressing and ornamentation, face. Then later, any number of hours later, then we sit down, close our eyes and chant japa. And we try to immerse our mind layer by layer into deeper and deeper recollection of that form that we saw, that we took darshan of in the morning. And as one engages in this practice of trying to recollect that transcendental form of darshan, he sees how he goes through, his mind passes through different layers. It's almost like if you take 100 petals of a flower, you pick off 100 petals of a lotus or a rose, and you take a needle with a thread, like you're making a petal garland, and you stick the needle through the petals, it goes through, and then you get the 100 petals on the needle and pull them down. As one tries to capture the form, his attention powers, they're actually pierced through different layers of his mind and consciousness. So when one begins to meditate like this, first he closes his eyes and tries to see, remember the deity. Of course, this can also go into reading a passage of Leela, but we'll just say, we'll start with Rupam, Rup Dhyan. And first it's black. You close your eyes and it's, oh, I saw. And then it's like the first petal is black. And as you increase and try it without getting headache, there's a difference between concentrating and furrowing your brow. These are your brow, your eyebrows. Like, don't do that. You know, I have to think deeply. No, this is the forehead. Everything is like relaxed, but the actual, this is called Trikuta. This is the third eye, Agya Chakra. That just with all nose and breathing, everything relaxed. You try to focus. You're chanting, you're hearing the holy name, and say Radha Shyama Sundara. What are they looking at? Then the first layer, your concentration, your eye, your visual eye, eyes, not the eye like I am, but the visual eyes, the internal vision. First you see black, then it becomes gray, then it becomes opaque. Opaque means like glass with white paint on it, and some light coming through. Then it becomes clear, then you say, oh. I'm seeing some outline. And then what happens at that time, when you go to that little bit deeper level of concentration, then other faces start to drop in that are stored in the subconscious. Because there are many, as you increase your powers of concentration, you're conscious, but you're concentrating. You're not sleeping, like dreaming, which is also subconscious. You're concentrating, you're awake, you're chanting Hare Krishna mantra, you're concentrating. As you go deeper and deeper, you want to see one particular image of what the deities look like. It's called recollection and immersion. And then you start to see the face of Shamsundara Radharani, but then another face, faces that are stored in the subconscious, maybe mother or husband, they start coming also in front. You start to see Krishna. I say, wait a minute, who's that? That's not Krishna. Then you have to push those faces away and put them back. And then you concentrate more. Of course, you're praying also, Krishna, please, I want to actually see. And then it's like, as you concentrate more and more, then you actually start to see. And then as you're going through layers and layers, as if your consciousness is like a tunnel. Imagine like a pipe. Like there's a pipe? Pipe like this. And the face, and it's all dark, and the face of Krishna or Shamsundara is in the back end of that pipe. And you're entering the pipe, and it's very, very dark. And as you get closer, the face starts to come out from the back of the pipe to the forefront where the light is, and then you can see it more and more clearly as you concentrate. It's a practice. The gopis are simply talking. They're simply talking Harikatha amongst themselves and these beautiful verses describing Krishna's beauty. And they become so immersed in that katha and that shruti, that hearing, that they start to see Krishna with his pasha, with his rope over his shoulders and his niryoga tied attractively in his turban. And then they get more and more absorbed and their bhava starts stimulating and they start crying and all these things. But this practice we can do, I don't know if you've ever done it before, but it's something, and it's difficult because, as I say, when you first start, you just see black. Well, if you close your eyes, if you close your eyes right now, what do you see? It's black, isn't it? Because you're just seeing that, there's no light, and there's no light hitting your pupil. Well, we're not talking about that. That's why you say inner vision or mind's vision. Of course, the gopis is heart vision. But then we want to transfer the vision, because what is seeing? Is the eyeball seeing or is the mind seeing? This is the question. Is the eyeball, eyeball? The blue, brown, the pupil, the iris, the sclera, and all these things, you want to get technical. Is the eyeball seeing or is the mind seeing? Answer the question. Is the eyeball seeing or is the mind seeing? Raj Dharanaki! The mind is seeing. Is the nose smelling or what? Or is the mind smelling? Is the tongue tasting or is the mind tasting? What's the proof? Nidra hara vihara kadi vijato chatyanta dino chayo. I'm sorry. I'm one of those unfortunate people that sleep. The proof is that when you sleep, do you see anybody or anything when you sleep? Yes? No. When you sleep, do you ever dream? Do you see anybody when you sleep? Do you hear them speak sometimes? Do you ever taste anything? Do you ever smell anything? Yes. But your eyes are closed, your mouth is closed, your ears are closed. And you feel also, but your hands are inert, they're just lying there. A man feels he's embracing some girl. And even gets, and a boy thinks he's running, there's a tiger chasing him in his brain when he's sleeping. And his muscles are, and he's all sweating. He's totally sweating. The mind is a seer, the mind is a taster. It's all going on in the mind. These are receiving organs. Organs to the light, eye receives some light, the ears receive some sound. And then the processing agent and the perceiving agent, the conscious agent is the mind. What anesthesia is all about. They drug the mind center, so then the senses are dysfunctional. So it can operate on your eye. Your eyeball is there and the light is coming in your eye, but you don't see the guy doing laser surgery on your eye. Your eye is wide open. And he's got a laser beam in your eye cutting open your retina. But the mind is not connected, so you can't see. When we try to do this process of meditation, which I first mentioned, we close our eyeballs, so then we see black, because we're only functioning on the level of the eyeball seeing. Now when we talk about mind's eye, or seeing with the mind's eye, then we have to increase our powers of concentration. So then the vision is always in the mind. But we think that actually the eye is the seer. So when we first start to meditate, we close the eyes and meditate on the deity form Radha Shama Sundar that you saw. Oh, I can't do it. I don't see anything. It's all black. You're impatient and stupid, and they say that. I said, no, you have to go beyond the eyeball. That's a great title for a book. Go beyond the eyeball. Go deep. Go internal, inside. And you have to push it. It's like breaking through something. You have a drill and you're trying to drill some hole in the wall. And finally, and you have to get through the outer coverings of the mind. And when you start to get through the outer mind, because there's the conscious mind, then you come to the unconscious or inner mind. And I said, you're trying to see Radha Shama Sundar, just as his practice, I said. You see them, you saw them in the morning, now you're chanting japa, and you want to see. Because the gopis are just simply talking about Krishna, out with the cows. He's out with the cows. They're saying he has a rope tied on his turban, and he has a rope hanging over his shoulder, and they start feeling so much love, and they start to actually see it because they become so deeply absorbed in that meditation. It becomes so real and clear to them. Because, of course, they have prema drishti. we don't have. But at least let us capture the static form of the Krishna before us as the Murti, with a very elementary and simple meditative process. So when you sit there and Hare Krishna, that's chanting Krishna's name, that's also Shyamasundara, is also Krishna. So the ears are captured. Now, the mind's eye, we close our eyes and what do we see? We see black. We see the inside of our eyelid or whatever. Absence of light is darkness. Open your eyes, light is there. At nighttime, your eyes are open or they're closed, it's darkness, isn't it? Because there's no light hitting the eyeball. Close your eyes and then you don't see. And then as you concentrate more, relax, face, muscles, everything relax, chanting. Of course, you're praying also. Krishna, please reveal your beautiful form in my mind so I can see. I mean, there's this whole discussion in Tapaloka with Gopal Kumar and the rishis there, the meditative rishis. Gopal Kumar says, I don't see my Lord up here. I don't see Madan Gopal here. I want to see Krishna. And they said, hey, you stupid kid, sit down and meditate. It's much higher to see the Lord in your meditation than see him externally. So he goes, forget it. I want to play with him. I want to see him. So that's a whole other level, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But at least in this practice, when we first see it's black, then maybe it's gray, then we start to see like the outline of maybe Radharani's face, and maybe her eyes, or Krishna's Shyamasundara. Because then we're starting to go to the subconscious. Because whatever we see, whatever we hear or experience through each day is registered, is painted, or it's like you have these cell phones that have a camera in the back, like a camera phone. Oh well, and you hold it up to some image, some pic you want to take, and you hold it, and it goes click, you know, goes zip like that, and it takes a picture. Then it's like stored. So everything we're seeing and hearing, it's like taking a picture, and it's being stored in our chitta. So we everyone agrees. Yes, we saw the deities, and they were wearing this big green peacock outfit, and there was some green peacock, the yellow, and then this mala. We saw that all, and we took a picture. And when you take a picture of the cell phone, it shows you everything that it's snapped, and everything's there. All the necklaces and everything is right there on the disc or file. So with our minds, the cameras of our eyes, we also took a snap of the deities, and it's there on the film. It's on the card, whatever they call it, the memory card. It's on our memory card. It's in our memories, in our chitta. So that goes into the subconscious file. Because we have to act. We're acting in the conscious world now. We're not just walking around seeing Radha Shyamasundara everywhere and bump our nose. So we're negotiating with the groceries. We're buying the subji. We're in the conscious world. And that's in the background. Now we're meditating. We close the conscious world. We want to enter it into the background, into the subconscious. We want to pull a particular file out of there. So when we start to meditate and we see the face of Radha Shyamasundara, we just start to see the outline, and now because we've entered into the subconscious, then everything else is in the subconscious may float in there. We see our mother's picture comes in. We're looking at Krishna. Hey, wait a minute. I'm seeing my mother. Then again, more concentration. Hare Krishna, Radharani, please, I want to see my mother. Because they're all like sharing that subconscious region. And to the extent that we're really detached from all these previous samskaras, and to the extent which our chitta becomes purified, that's how much the transcendental personalities and images and leelas and deities and persons, they will manifest when we meditate, and not all these other ghosts and hobgoblins from the past that are also jingling around our subconscious. That's what Chaitodharvana Marjanam is about. And that's the proof of the pudding. It's like everyone's in class, everyone's taking notes, everyone's studying. Then when a teacher gives out the exams, then we find out who really knows the stuff. Right? So everyone's doing Shravanam, everyone's doing Kirtanam. And then you sit down and meditate, then you find out who's really... Then you'll find out the extent of the purity of your chitta. Oh, yes, you know, I'm really getting purified. I feel purified. I'm following all the four regular principles for 99 years, and I'm doing so many things. But now I sit down and meditate, and then, oh, hey, granddad, hey, grandma, hey, there's my little spotted dog, and there's my favorite parakeet. Hey, what are you doing? I haven't seen you in 29 years. You know, it's, oh, there's my first sports car. All right. So there's a lot of garbage, you know, rattling around in outer space. Or inner space, like they say, they send up all these satellites and they burn out, and there's all kinds of, there's actually America and Russia, all these countries have a bunch of burned out rockets and they're just going eternally, you know, all these rockets they sent to wherever they went to, they're finished, they're not flying around, there's no more gas, they're just empty, like junk cars. You see sometimes in a city some guy's car is junked out on the side of the road. So they have junk cars up in outer space, but there's no gravity, so they're not falling on anybody's head. So all their old hot rods and stuff, you know, they were just spinning around up there, 50,000 miles up above our heads. There's all these old spacecrafts and satellites from 1950. The first cosmonaut, first Russian satellite, is up there just floating around in space. It's a joke, but it's true. It's like you throw a plastic Clorox bottle or a bleach bottle in the ocean, right? And one of these plastic white bottles of bleach or, and you come back in 3,000 years, it's still floating around the ocean because it doesn't, it's not biodegradable. You all agree, right? You know, that heavy-duty plastic. Just, if you come back in 3,000 years, it'll still be floating around the ocean with your message inside and said, you know, if you ever find this bottle, chant Hare Krishna. Satellites and all kinds of rockets floating around in outer space. You know, USA, USSR, France, England. Maybe once in a while they pop into each other and make a big firecracker or something. That's a while. I mean, the man is like, man is not satisfied polluting the air and water and earth, or even polluting outer space with junk cars and trash cans and old toothpaste tubes and stuff. Try and see Krishna, and you'll stop seeing anybody else in this world. Hari Bol.